She had waited on her, she was the Guru Bhakman Vicky Jai. All glories to the Sama devotees. All glories to the Sama devotees. All glories to the Sama devotees. Glory to Shri Guru, Shri Guranga, Shri Krishna Sankirtan Ki Jai. So reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter about the further inquiries by Vidura, and we're on text number 38. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Purushasya cha samsthanam. Swarupam va parasya cha. Jnanam cha naidamam yattat.
Jnanam cha naidamam yattat.
Guru shishya prayojanam.
Guru shishya prayojanam.
Purushasya cha samsthanam. Swarupam va parasya cha. Jnanam cha naidamam yattat. Guru Shishya Prayojanam.
Guru Shishya Prayojanam.
Guru Purushasya, of the living entity, cha, also, samsthanam, existence, swarupam, identity, va, either, or, parasya, of the supreme, cha, also, jnanam, knowledge, cha, also, naigamam, in the matter of the Upanishads, yet, that, tat, the same, guru, spiritual master, shishya, disciple, prayojanam, necessity, translation, purport, Srila Prabhupada, What are the truths regarding the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What are their identities? What are the specific values in the knowledge in the Vedas? And what are the necessities for the spiritual master and his disciple? Purport. The living entities are constitutionally servitors of the Lord who can accept all kinds of service from everyone. It is clearly declared in Bhagavad Gita 5.29 that the Lord is a supreme enjoyer of the benefits of all sacrifices and penances, the proprietor of all that is manifested, and the friend of all living entities. That is his real identity. Therefore, when the living entity accepts the supreme proprietorship of the Lord and acts in that attitude, he resumes his real identity. In order to elevate the living entity to this standard of knowledge, there is a necessity of spiritual association. The bona fide spiritual master desires that his disciples know the process of rendering transcendental service to the Lord, and the disciples also know that they have to learn about the eternal relationship between God and the living entity from a self-realized soul. To disseminate transcendental knowledge, one must retire from mundane activities on the strength of enlightenment and knowledge in terms of Vedic wisdom. That is the sum and substance of all the questions in this verse. I was also asked to begin a series of discussions of the past on the appearance of Lord Mishringadev, which will go on for a week to increase the consciousness in the temple and in our hearts about these different great personalities and appearances and forms and, of the Lord. So I'll do that after I speak on the Bhagavatam, since we've just finished this nice, wonderful verse, very important verse, and very elevated questions, really high caliber questions, not normal questions, day-to-day questions. And only really the spiritual aspirants that are very few in this world will be interested in hearing about these questions and actually taking to heart these answers, which are the absolute truth. There's plenty of knowledge out there, all kinds of facts and figures, and the latest news reports and everything that people digest as truth, but are they really truth? I was just at my sister's the other night, and it was time for the news. So they have like five different things you can look at in the news. They have these TVs, you know, where you can see a whole bunch of things. And they said, well, which one should we listen to? And I said, well, doesn't that one contradict that one? And he goes, yes, that one's biased this way, and that one's biased this way, and that one's just a bunch of lies. And I said, well, what do you listen to, you know? He says, we just get sick of this after a while. And it's the truth, you know. There is no faith in what anyone says, all this material knowledge, because it's all speculation. It's all biased. And therefore, there's no faith, and there's no trust. And then because of that, there's fear. Everyone fears that they can't trust anyone. So it's a very, very sad material world, as was just discussed in this little recitation by Mukha this morning. But that's materially, and so spiritually, it's a whole different story. That there is no conditioned soul that can give absolute truth, because they're conditioned, so they can't give anything absolute. So therefore, spiritual knowledge comes from the Supreme Lord Himself. And this is something that we can accept and have faith in, and to increase our love and service towards Him. So it's very important that we understand that these questions and answers are from the Supreme Lord and meant to enlighten us in that way. And they should be taken without argument. They should be taken as absolute. And if you look at some of these questions, You can imagine that if you were in college and they gave you a pop quiz with these questions on it. Most people don't think about this kind of thing. You know, who am I? Who's the supreme? What's a guru? What's a disciple? You'd get some speculation. Maybe you'd get a little bit of sentiment. But you definitely probably would get blank papers turned in, because no one understands these types of questions, because they're so beyond anything that anyone has time to think about, because they're too busy filling their ear holes with all this so-called knowledge. But the answers here in the Bhagavad, there's no speculation. There's, like I said, there's no argument about it. There's been no change to it for thousands of years. It's been just like it was spoken. And it's been realized by great sages, by great saints, by very elevated personalities. Because this vibration is pure, it's Shabda Brahman. And it comes from the spiritual realm. And it's so powerful that it can go inside and break open our hearts so that we can connect again with the Supreme and begin to realize that, as it's saying here, that we are simply eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. And of course, not only this Bhagavat Purana, but then the holy name also is super powerful, because it's non-different from the Lord also. So we have the best means of understanding this absolute truth. So it just requires some faith, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur chants. O people of faith, O people of faith, by the order of Lord Gauranga, O brothers, I beg these three requests of you: chant Krishna, worship Krishna, and teach others about Krishna. So this is what we have to do. We have to understand that when we have faith in the Lord, then we should distribute it to others. And then again, in another song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, oh, when there is attachment to the holy name of Krishna, the life of a living being very easily becomes successful. Oh, without affection for Krishna, life is simply useless. At the end of life, you will obtain the beautiful vision of Radha and Shyam in Vrindavan, but only when the mercy of the Lord Gauranga is first achieved. Oh. So this is something that we have to develop, is that faith. And we do that by hearing from the spiritual master, as we've been hearing the last few days, the importance of hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing, more hearing, so that we can cleanse ourselves of all this other contamination that we've been around for so many lifetimes. And so we're very fortunate. We can take this whole package that Srila Prabhupada has given us. He's given us this philosophy, which we accept as absolute, and he gives service to Krishna, which is absolute. And then our sadhana and the holy name, there's only gain. There's no loss in this process. And it's a real shelter for us. We feel like, you know, I can go anywhere, I can speak to anybody, and I have what I need to explain this absolute truth and what life is meant for. The unfortunate people, well, they're influenced by the so-called human civilization, which promotes a different kind of shelter. Their shelter is intoxication. Right now, all over the United States and all over the world, they're promoting this, you know, taking of intoxication, legalizing it, saying, yeah, it's good for your health, it's good for your mind. Yes, go for it. Prabhupada said, we're already intoxicated. We don't need to put more on top. But they're saying, no. Yes, you need some peace of mind. Good, take intoxication. And then there's the illicit sex. That's advertised everywhere. You can't go anywhere without it being put right in front of you. And of course, it's the result of it is what? That they kill the little babies in the womb. They avoid the responsibility just for their own sense gratification. Now in colleges, they have these, you know, put your coin in machines, and out comes a day after pill. You can take a day after sex life, take a pill, and and finished, you know, no worries, kid's gone, problem's gone, responsibility's gone. But the karma is not gone, and these living entities will be put in a womb of another mother and killed many times over. And then, of course, the real killing machine of the slaughterhouses. This is a so-called shelter because their tongue has to have this product. They're not happy without it. And so they're very mercilessly killing all these innocent animals. And the result of that is what? The killers have to be killed. So there's wars, unlimited wars. How many can you name going on right now? So many wars. And one war creates another war, and then another war after that, because anyway, it's unlimited. So this is what Prabhupada described very perfectly as a soul-killing civilization. He hits a nail on the head by this term. But actually, people are hitting holes in their head with these nails, with this soul-killing civilization, such that they empty their brains and they can't even... They have nothing, but Prabhupada said their head is filled with cow dung now. They don't even understand. They have no mercy, no compassion, and no understanding of these higher questions and accepting these answers of who they really are, which is the humble servant of the Supreme Lord. But Krishna is very kind. He sends Prabhupada and all the previous acharyas. He comes himself sometimes. And he gives us this Bhagavata Purana, which is satisfying to the soul. It gives wealth to our existence here in this lifetime and in the future lifetimes. And of course, Lord Chaitanya came very recently, gave us the holy name, which is himself. And that is so powerful that it can crack open these hardened hearts, which some great devotees describe as I have a stone in my heart instead of my heart. So it's very hard to crack open, but the holy name is very powerful. Yesterday I was planting 4,000 seeds, but I had instructions on the seeds that first you have to break open them put them in boiling water for 10 seconds and then soak them. So that's to crack open the seed, just like our hearts. You have to crack open, and then you have to water, you have to soak with the holy name. And then the little creeper, that little teeny tiny creeper of love of God can grow and blossom again. So this is the process that's recommended in this age, and it really does work. We're all sitting here, we all had very hardened hearts before, and didn't really want to accept that we were a servant of God, but there's great pleasure in finding the absolute truth. And so Lord Chaitanya has recruited many souls now. He's got a global sankirtan. All over the world is this holy name being distributed. Whether people like it or not, they're getting this holy name. And Lord Chaitanya, he didn't want just sideliners, people sitting on the sidelines rooting for his Sankirtan army, but he wanted people to be on the front lines and to be part of this glorious movement of Krishna's holy name. And so we should try to figure out somehow to fit into this army. There's many, many posts, and there's plenty of open places. So we should, sometimes we have to get out of our comfort zone and jump in the front line and get that mercy. And to give the mercy, because it's our duty and our great pleasure to actually serve in this army of Lord Chaitanya's. But there's a reluctance for people to hear this message. They don't even want to hear the answers, because the answers rain on their parade. Their parade is that they're the controller, like it says here, that actually Krishna is a proprietor. I'm sorry, you're owned by somebody. Yes, you are a so-called slave. You're a loving servant, but you're owned by the Supreme Lord, and you're meant to serve him in a loving way. But people don't want to hear that. They want to think that they're the Supreme. So, therefore, the spiritual master is required. The spiritual master is trained to in the expertise of how to deliver this message and to change our hearts and to redirect us in the right way. And Krishna empowers them because they do have that faith. There's a nice prayer about the spiritual master. And a couple of the verses are, O mind, just worship the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Without receiving the mercy of the pure devotee, one will not have the potency to execute regular spiritual practices. Therefore, O my dear mind, I urge you to worship him. Please worship him at every moment. And so one needs a spiritual master. It's essential. You won't be able to execute devotional service, this bhakti, without becoming initiated by the spiritual master. You can't avoid it. It sets you right there next to Krishna. And it helps you have that strength to overcome all these distractions. It's just so important. Oh, mind, just worship the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. Shri Guru is the personification of the bliss inherent in Krishna's causeless mercy, and he is therefore the abode of mercy for souls who are suffering in the material world. He is a revealer of transcendental knowledge, pure devotion, and divine love. Shri Guru is a savior of fallen conditioned souls. So this transcendental sound is transmitted by the spiritual master into our hearts. It's injected. We might hear it, and other people might read the books, but until they really have that potency given at the time of initiation, they'll be missing out and waste a lot of time. So this purport is stressing to understand our position and in relationship to the spiritual master. I think Mitrasena was the other day in class, he mentioned that he was given dakshin of $20 or something like that for giving some Indian man driver's lessons, how to drive a car. And so we're getting the absolute truth. So what kind of dakshin should we give our spiritual master? It's like we can't calculate how many lifetimes we should plan on serving our spiritual master. And what did Sri Prabhupada want? He said, become Krishna conscious. So this is the greatest thing that we can do to please Srila Prabhupada, is to actually imbibe all this absolute truth in and become Krishna conscious, which requires giving up all of our material desires, which is no easy task whatsoever. So this is something that is going to take a lifetime, that's for sure. But when you think of the material world, which is the source of all these desires, it's an ugly place. It is really, truly an ugly place. And if we were to peel back the curtain of Maya, we would see what it's really like. Just like in that Wizard of Oz, the little doggy Toto or whatever his name was, he goes in there and he pulls back the curtain and there's the wizard pushing all the buttons, trying to make it look real nice. So if we pull back this curtain, what are we going to find? We're going to find the witch, Maya, and her associates of anger, lust, greed. They're all working behind the scenes to bind us here, to think that it's a wonderful place and that we should become their servant. But somehow or other she's convincing us, play golf. Spend your life playing golf. Make some bombs to kill each other. Watch movies. And drop dead. And then repeat it again, next lifetime, and the next lifetime, and the left time. She's really expert at this. It's amazing how we get this curtain pulled over us. It's so thick. So in this purport, it's with these wonderful questions and answers, we can be encouraged to become Krishna conscious, because Krishna is all attractive. If we hear enough of him, we can actually change our attitude towards the material world and realize that it's not the place to be. But Srila Prabhupada, he was expert. It's described here that one gets the strength of enlightenment by becoming detached, by becoming a liberated soul, by retiring from the material world. And Prabhupada did. He retired. He just said, I'm out of here. I'm just going to spend my lifetime spreading Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Krishna gave him so much potency. I was listening to some lectures the other night. He was talking with Yogi Bhajan. And Yogi Bhajan was saying, oh, yeah, we want to get all the groups, all the spiritual groups together just to you know, spread the love. And Prabhupada questions, you know, love of what? You know, who's God? What are you promoting? And he says, and he goes so deep, Prabhupada so expert, he gets Yogi Bhajan to admit that Krishna is God, and that most Indians think that Krishna is God, even Muslims think that really Krishna is God. And he says, so, Prabhupada goes, so why don't you worship him? Why are you doing all these other things? Just worship him. Preach about him. And, you know, he shrinks back. And then another one, some other philosophy religionist is describing his crazy philosophy and gets confused in his speech because he says, oh, yes, we just need to love God. And then Papa goes, well, who's God? And he goes, well, I didn't mean that we really know who God is, but we should. He gets all confused. Papa says, we can give you God. We can give you God. So why don't you take him? We know who he is. Take him. And the Prabhupada's so expert in delivering this message. Because that's what his whole life was about. And so I'm not going to be here on Sunday, but I'd just like to say one thing about Gopal Krishna Maharaj. He did that. He retired. Within 2 weeks, I heard from a friend that she was in the temple when he came in Toronto and things, and he came with a suit and tie on. He was going to Pepsi Cola, serve slave, you know, in the business, and he heard about Prabhupada and went and saw him, and he actually went right in his room and spoke to him, and he immediately was convinced. So he kept coming to the temple, and then he goes, this is it, forget it. And he just threw down everything, retired, and you could see how he became 100% involved in Krishna consciousness. There wasn't anything else. There wasn't any slack in his service. There wasn't any doubt. It was just full force ahead. Nothing to stop him. And therefore, Krishna gave him power. Prabhupada gave him empowerment to spread Krishna consciousness in Russia and in India and all over the planet. Such a powerful person. You could just see that this potency that they're talking about, this strength, became because he was so convinced by Srila Prabhupada. So he's an exceptional person, so exceptional and so powerful that even the Prime Minister of India recognized his disappearance. He sent a letter talking about his glories. So that's pretty pronounced personality. So this is all based on the faith that we can actually become retired. There's another description. I don't know the person's name. I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. But he used to be San Diego president and everything, and then he became sannyasi recently. He's not very well. Bhadrarayan too. I think there was a letter. His father was retiring from his 50, 60 years of working somewhere, and in the lecture he mentioned his son, Bhadrarayan Prabhu, who he says, my son, he retired when he was 17 years old. So yes, somehow or other, we have to have that real retirement attitude that I don't want to be here in this material world any longer. I just want to be involved in spiritual life and in spreading it. And that can only be done by the grace of Srila Prabhupada. He encouraged us from day one to dovetail. He was very kind on us. Okay, you have these material desires. Use them for Krishna. And we're still doing that. How many of us have actually gotten rid of our bucket list yet? I haven't. I'm still thinking about some of the things I'd like to do and trying to figure out how to do it in a Krishna conscious way. But someday, if we pray hard enough and we have the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, if we please him by becoming Krishna conscious, then we can get rid of all these material desires and become a worthy servant and hopefully do something for his divine grace and for Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So this should be our prayers to the spiritual master. So I'll say a couple of words. I'm supposed to begin the meditation of... does anyone have any questions on that? About this verse?
The definition of retirement is not defined what you are saying. You are working more harder. But the definition of retirement, people think in general, means no more work.
That was Srila Prabhupada. He never retired. He was on the battlefield forever. Because this is our real dharma. This is our real life. This is what we are begging for, is a real life of being connected with Krishna. That complete circle gives us energy. And there's no retirement from that. So this is our real transition from retire that and now. No retiring from our eternal position of serving Krishna. And Prabhupada was a perfect example of that. Died on the battlefield, preaching with his dictaphone at the last minute. So, yes. Anything else? Okay, back there. Dharma.
It's not a question, it's a comment.
You're talking about the Prime Minister of India was... send a letter.
Yeah.
Practically all the ministers in the cabinet, they all knew Gopal Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah. So influential.
Yeah. And then there's this member of parliament from India. I forget his name. Sudha something Trivedi. He's a Brahmin, so he's really learning. So he goes and speaks to thousands of Indians. And he says that, do you know, you can go to any country and Sanatana Dharma is being followed there. And then he says, do you know how that is? And he says, it's ISKCON.
Yeah. And so
he always praises ISKCON, Prabhupada.
Yeah. So in preparation for Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance day, I'm supposed to speak about a further chapter in this volume about the pregnancy of Diti. There's actually some very strange appearances in this whole pastime because, first of all, Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance pops out of a solid pillar of cement. I mean, sometimes we have a play here. You actually take... this cement board that you use to put on the walls here, and you score it, and then you can bend it, and it looks like a pillar. And sometimes our players have a hard time busting through that, what less busting through a solid cement, you know, a stone pillar of Lord Nrisimhadev. So that's pretty amazing. And then you have the appearance of Prahlad. Prahlad was born in a demon family, total demoniac family, but he ends up the perfect devotee. Exemplary devotee. And then you have Hiranyaksha, who was born in a devotee family, and he ends up to be the greatest demon. So there's some different kinds of appearances here. But the pastime is that Diti, who is one of the 13 daughters of Daksha, she of course was betrothed kind of willingly. They kind of hinted they wanted to marry Kashyap, and so they got betrothed. And how many of you have sisters? Any of you ladies have sisters? Yeah, I was right in the middle. I'm right in the middle of my sisters. And we talk about it sometimes now that we're older, about the envy between sisters. There's definitely some envy that's there. Maybe not devotees, but non-devotees, definitely there's some envy between sisters. These other 12 sisters, they got pregnant and they had nice kids from them, and everything, and then Diti's left with no progeny. So she quite envious. And the time came when she decided to do something about it. And of course, as Prabhupada said, women are 10 times lustier than men. So she gets in a very lusty mood, and she approaches her husband, Kashyapa Muni. No ordinary husband. First of all, she finds him in meditation. Totally absorbed in his meditation. And so, but she has the wherewith to go for and disturb his meditation with this proposition to get pregnant so that she can, you know, get back to her sisters, I guess. And so she approaches him, and he listens to the request, and he's, although he's a great sage and everything, he has some weaknesses. Some of the acharyas say he's a little henpecked, but he actually glorifies her and says, oh, you're so wonderful, and this and that and everything. And then, he says, this is not a good time. It's the witching hour. This is when Lord Shiva and all the hobgoblins and everything are out. Not a good time. Let's not go there. But she pesters him a little bit, and finally he goes, oh, all right, you're so wonderful, okay, but can you wait a little bit, you know? And she goes, no, can't wait. And so she insists, and he warns, he says, you know, this is a very ungodly hour, and out of this is probably going to come some ghostly type character is going to come from this pregnancy. You don't want that. But anyway, it happens. And he says that, you know, that Lord Shiva is going to be very angry because of this. And she, and from this pregnancy, you're going to get a tyrant, some tyrants born. And they're going to have havoc all over this planet. They're going to kill people. They're going to be abominable. So Diti goes, she actually prays to Lord Shiva and his wife, who's her sister, Parvati, to try to, can you ease up on us a little? Can you ease, make it a little less, you know, intolerable? And then Kashyapa Muni, he predicts, he says, these are going to be horrible births. But Krishna's going to come and kill them, so they'll get liberated. And she goes, and then she actually becomes very happy. She goes, well, this is wonderful. It's worth it, you know, that they're going to actually liberate my children. So this is the story that is kind of behind what we're going to see unfold within this week. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that, but it's a wonderful pastime. Prabhupada loved Lord Nrisimhadeva. I was there in Los Angeles when they showed him the first little presentation on a slideshow of Lord Nrisimhadeva, and it was his appearance day. We went out on Sankirtan door to door in Hollywood Boulevard, of all places, all day long fasting. And we come back, and we set up in the auditorium. At that time, there was seats in the L.A. auditorium where the temple is now, and they set a projector, and it was these funky little drawings that they put on the slideshow and projected up. But it was kind of fun, and Prabhupada, I got to sit really close to Prabhupada, about as close as Pranam Govinda is, and I was just watching him. I wasn't hardly watching the thing, because he was like a little kid in a movie theater, you know. I'm expecting someone to give him popcorn or something, but he was on the edge of his seat, and it came to the part when Aranyakashipu goes, what in the hell is going on here? And I go, they shouldn't have said that, you know, that wasn't very nice of the play. And then, but Prabhupada was roaring laughter. He was going back and forth like this, and laughing like crazy, just enjoying the whole thing. And so he loved the pastime of Lord Nrisimhadeva, and there was that picture right in the temple room when you first walk in the old temple door of Lord Nrisimhadeva and blood splattered all over the place, and it's really a gory one, you know? And I was thinking, not so nice, the first thing people see when they come to the temple. It was actually one of the first things I saw when I came in the Boulder Temple was a picture of Lord Nrsimhadev. And what is that? But Prabhupada loved that picture. He liked the gory, he liked the blood, he liked the whole thing. So we can also relish this pastime. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.